Good afternoon. This is Barbara Glickstein. You're tuned into Health Cetera, produced by the Center for Health Media and Policy at City University of New York. Today's guest is Dr. Johanna Gaskins. Dr. Gaskins is a registered nurse and has a Doctor of Nursing Practice with a focus on integrative health and healing. Dr. Gaskins is a certified clinical aromatherapy practitioner. There is much in the news about opioid addiction and medicine's role in contributing to this national epidemic. We are at a crisis public health situation, with addiction in general hitting every family and every community, in, at least in terms of within your circle, both socially, professionally, and perhaps in your church or in your synagogue or mosque. We understand that treating pain is critical. What may not be working is using opioids as a first line in treating pain. My guest, Dr. Johanna Gaskins, has a specialty in aromatherapy. In addition to that, as a clinician, she works on the pain team, and we'll talk more about how this issue is being approached and what could be done better. Welcome to Health Cetera, Dr. Gaskins.
Thank you for having me, Barbara.
I'd love your take on how you've been monitoring this issue as someone both working with populations who are facing acute and chronic pain, as well as being at the level of your nursing career where you sit on important committees discussing this issue.
Sure, Barbara. First, with related to pain committees, hospitals are judged by how well they are able to control a patient's pain. This is typically done by HCAHPS scores. These HCAHPS scores are hospital consumer assessment and healthcare provider and system surveys that a patient will be asked to complete once they have discharged from a hospital. It tells us a little bit about how the organization manage the person's pain according to their perception. If that individual reports that their pain was not well controlled, this can impact the hospital's bottom line as far as how they are reimbursed, especially by the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services.
When is that survey given to the patient? Is it while they're in the hospital or after they've been discharged?
It's after they've been discharged. So typically, it's really important that a person's pain has been managed according to their specifications. That is not always something that a hospital is capable of doing because hospitals are interested in patients being able to participate in physical therapy and things like that. And sometimes pain medicine can cause folks to be sleepy or not engaged in the physical therapy in a way that might help them to be discharged from the hospital quicker.
And of course, there may be those instances where, in fact, a patient's pain wasn't controlled and could have been managed better.
Absolutely. There are incidences where individuals are not given proper pain control for a myriad of reasons. And in those instances, patients might respond negatively to a survey when asked.
So because this data, as you mentioned, influences reimbursement from the federal government on how well hospitals are doing, we know that the Affordable Care Act, in addition, has instituted more and more of these measures, not necessarily exclusively around pain management, but on readmissions, et cetera, in order to really create more accountability and better patient outcome, patient safety, savings on dollars as well. Are there studies looking at whether this monitoring has influenced an increase in the use of opioids?
Well, I'm sure there are some studies that might cover a wide range of approaches in pain management. But what we do know is that that the way a person perceives pain and perceives satisfaction with a hospital's performance related to pain management varies across the board. It also has a lot to do with census, how many patients were actually at the hospital during that time. That can control how scores are managed. There are some institutions that are getting very high rates, ratings on their pain scores, and sometimes that's related to how many nurses are available to take care of fewer patients. So, and then having not-for-profit, for-profit sort of scenarios also play a very important role in these pain assessment aspects.
I'd love for us to back up. Now we have this, we sort of started with the information around leaving the hospital and people reporting how their pain was managed, to maybe we can go out of the hospital setting, but even in the hospital setting, we ask people to tell us to describe their pain. Talk to us about that clinical encounter. I know you also, as a clinician, have these consultations with patients who come to you with an acute onset, those who sadly are living with a chronicity of pain. Let's talk our listeners through what that, in the best quality of way, should sound and look like.
Sure. What I want to start with is, despite our robust understanding of pain physiology and management across broad populations, including the recommendation of multimodal interventions, a practice gap persists that can result in inadequate pain control. So the American Medical Association is working to close those practice gaps. So in addition to that, providers have yet to scratch the surface in terms of taking advantage of the body's natural inhibitory pathways as part of a routine pain management regimen. For me, as an integrative nurse clinician, a whole person perspective is my approach. So what this means is that we know that pain is universal, and that is 100% produced by the brain. So when you're talking about assessing for pain, we ask patients their pain score on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 being not feeling pain at all, 10 being feeling the most pain they've ever felt in life. So making this assessment, understanding where the patient is, helps to guide us in how much pain medicine, or what the, if you're using medication as the first line, but where to start with that individual's pain perception.
It is such a personal and subjective experience. Myself thinking as you were speaking of what might be unbearable for me may be very tolerable for someone else. So I know that you have exquisite nursing skills in order to help someone understand how to describe that. What are some of the ways you help people articulate what that means to them?
Sure. So first, how we approach a person is understanding where they are objectively in their pain, where they should be. So a person experiencing acute pain, and danger is ruled out, this is the type of pain that might be related to soft tissue, muscle, joints. We anticipate that there's some healing process that's taking place within 3 to 6 months of a time period. So in that regard, we anticipate that it's after a surgical procedure, after a trauma, we can gauge where the patient's pain maybe should be. And certainly if opioids are a first line for that particular situation to get that patient through a difficult time, we have expectations of a certain level of pain. As it relates to chronic or persistent pain, this is less about structural changes in the body and more about sensitivity of the nervous system. And this is rarely associated with the sympathetic nervous system arousal or anything like that. So that pain is really subjective because we can't really determine where that pain source is for the patient. What we do know is that pain is 100% produced by the brain. So in my practice, when I approach a person, I'm weighing all those things along with whether or not the patient has anxiety, is nauseous from the medication. Those things actually precipitate more pain or the pain perception. So those are some of the aspects I look at. I tend to trust my patients when they tell me that they're in pain.
Well, that's a good place to start, isn't it? We know that there are many disparities of populations who seek health care, where there's the institutionalized and individualized biases of someone's narrative. So we know that people of color are thought of very differently when it comes to and judged very differently when they come in with a pain complaint. There's significant data supporting that. Do you want to address that issue, Johanna Gaskins, my guest, who is a registered nurse and doctor of nursing practice focusing on integrative health and healing, and we're talking about pain.
Sure. The biases in healthcare are definitely an issue. There was a time when, and those times are ever present, but there was a time where if you were more vocal about your pain, then you were the person who received more care. If you were insured, if you appeared to be of some affluent background, then yes, certainly. Hospitals are going to manage the pain because you're an individual who is likely more likely to fill the survey, to be vocal about the care you've received. And minorities have been less vocal, less participatory in survey, completing surveys. And they have been permitted to sit with their pain a little bit longer and have less of a focus on whether or not their pain is well managed. Well, this sort of backfired on, I don't use the word backfired, but the intention for withholding pain medicine from the minority population was actually a good thing, perhaps not service-wise, but it actually allowed that individual to activate their natural inhibitory pathways, whereas the individual who is more affluent had more accessibility to healthcare. That was the individual who perhaps had too much pain medicine and had less opportunity for their body's own inhibitory pathways to support them in their pain management. So the disparity between the haves and have-nots, insured, uninsured, has really impacted the individual themselves unknowingly related to how much pain medicine was actually administered versus those who did not have access to pain medicine.
An ongoing conversation in healthcare, and a certainly a critical one for us to always bring in, because it is in almost every aspect of providing healthcare, one that has been threaded through and is creating disparities in populations throughout our country. I wondered if you can talk more, I know you can, about the body's innate ability to address pain and how the integrative approaches, both the aromatherapy approach that you're certified in, works with the body's innate processes to decrease pain.
Sure. First, when you're talking about essential oils, just for your listeners who may not have a full-on understanding of what essential oils are physical in nature and composed of a complex mixture of chemicals. Through delicate extraction processes, essential oils are taken from flowers, roots, fruits, trees, leaves, or plant stems. And there are several different types of essential oil substances, each with a specific molecular weight range of chemical components. And there are many different compounds produced as electrolytes by plants, and these compounds help the plant in protective roles, including infection control, humidity control, hormonal effects, wound healing, and attracting or repelling insects, birds, and animals. So when I am using essential oils as part of my practice, I don't use them in the sense that, you know, you're having pain, let me give you, you know, this essential oil. There is a process to the way I incorporate essential oils into helping to empower and activate the patient to participate in the process. So we're talking about a safe and sustainable way that folks can use their body's inhibitory pathways to activate, sort of retraining the brain, which is what I was getting to earlier. So my approach to managing pain with patients for long-term purposes and ways they can use them outside of my presence, first is to address the medical aspect, whether or not pharmacologicals are the best approach in those short-term moments, and chronic pain, not so much, and if surgery is a potential option, it could be helpful, but not likely. But my focus is on how thoughts and emotions affect the nervous system and how pain impacts, the pain impacts on people's lives, a big effect of stress on people's lives. So when I'm approaching people in the sense of helping them to manage chronic or persistent pain, I'm looking at how thoughts and emotions affect the nervous system, the role of diet and lifestyle. Are you eating inflammatory foods? Are you taking anything that decreases inflammation and boosts the immune system? I'm looking at the surrounding story, the person's personal story, to gain some understanding about the when and what events were happening when the pain developed, and helping the individual recognize deeper emotions that can play a healing, play a role in the healing process. And I'm also looking at the end goal, which is to, the person's physical activity and function and getting them moving in a comfortable way without fear. So retraining the brain and nervous system so that its protective default is not toward the pain. So when I am using a particular essential oil that is designed to help with pain, and the reason why essential oils are so good are because when you breathe in an essential oil, that essential oil enters into the olfactory system and into the amygdala and the limbic part of the brain, which is the emotional part of the brain, which is the same area that opioids work on. It's the same area that Suboxone works on. So essential oils have their place in this process, but creating the space around the use of essential oils, using integrative therapies like perhaps imagery or progressive muscle relaxation or doing energy work of some sort, whether that's Reiki or healing touch, therapeutic touch, having a healing presence, having soft music. These things can help to set the stage for an essential oil to work.
I'm moved and impressed by the comprehensiveness of your approach. And I think the education we all are getting is the oil is one component of the use of aromatherapy as a practice. I wondered if you can just, there were so many points that I noted in while you were describing this, Johanna. Can you talk about the when and what event at the time the pain started as part of your intake of the narrative of that person's life and story?
Sure. So an individual who has chronic pain, and I'll sort of share a story about a patient who had persistent lower back pain. The idea of leaving the hospital and going home caused this person to have a great deal of nausea just as she was to be discharged. So I wound up visiting this person in her room and sat with her. And later, as we were talking, found out that she was having issues with her husband feeling as though she did not have support at home, that he was not going to be helpful. Her daughter, who has some special needs and is away from home in college, wanders off at night in an area that is not savory for her to walk through. She also attempted suicide. The patient's daughter also attempted suicide the week before. So all of these things were contributing to the nausea she was experiencing and the pain. Her pain was exacerbating as she was to leave and go home. So when we're talking about the person's story, had I not sat with her in those moments and understood exactly what was happening and what was exacerbating the pain and causing this increased nausea, I would not have understood exactly the root cause of the pain or how exactly to treat her. Did she need medication? Absolutely not. Not in these moments. What she needed was someone to hear her and validate her concerns and someone to do something that allowed her body to calm itself. So that is what I did in those moments. I made that judgment. This individual was able to calm herself down. I did not use essential oils in that moment, but very well could have. What we did was we did a guided imagery. We did some deep breathing. What I did was guided her mind into a safer space. And when her mind was in that safer space, she was able to breathe herself into a calmer space where the nausea went down, her pain went down, and she felt a bit more hope about her situation. Even though her situation had not changed, her perception of the situation shifted in those moments.
And is that an experience that you would refer to as helping in that moment retrain the brain and the nervous system?
It's a very short piece of what can be done. So what I want to say is this is not a one-time fix-all. Retraining the brain and nervous system takes a period of time, and it just depends on that individual. But helping them to manage and cope with those situations can be very helpful over a period of time. When I say a period of time, I mean like they have, there are mindfulness-based stress reduction classes that are very helpful with retraining the brain and the nervous system. This is a course that can be found online. It's an 8-week course. It meets once a week, and there's a day-long retreat in the process. There are folks who have found a great deal of ability to manage their stress and manage their pain, which is exacerbated by stress, through mindfulness-based stress reduction courses. Now, this is also considered an integrative therapy for folks to involve themselves in for a long-term process.
We started out, and we have just another minute or two left. My guest is Johanna Gaskins. Dr. Haskins is a registered nurse with a doctorate of nursing practice and focuses on integrative health and healing. She's also a certified clinical aromatherapy practitioner. Talking about what is very much an epidemic in our country about opioid addiction as well as heroin and other drugs. But today we're talking about as an analgesic issue and pain management. Where do you hope you can, what are the next things you would hope happen given the approach that you've beautifully described to us today on using integrative approaches to pain management. Where would you like to see this go next?
That's a great question, Barbara. Where I'd like to see this being managed first is in the outpatient setting, where individuals are first coming into an understanding and awareness that they are experiencing pain, and to have a better assessment of the source, the root cause of the pain, take the time to have those conversations. Also, for healthcare providers, it would be incumbent upon them to understand that there are other practitioners who are available to do the work, so a more collaborative partnership in what medicine can do and what integrative therapies can do outside of the hospital setting, for them to participate in reaching out to the integrative community for the purpose of managing pain and stress and anxiety for their patients. Also in the hospital setting, what I'd like to see is a more robust integrative therapy program that is designed to help patients in the hospital setting learn some of the tools, learn some of these evidence-based therapies when they're in the hospital setting to lower cost, to decrease length of stays, to create a safe and sustainable way to manage symptoms. And just one small thing, an aromatherapy inhaler designed to decrease nausea is $3. A medication used called ondansetron or Zofran, used IV, can be $75. So the inhaler that a patient can use and grab creates an independent act for the patient to manage their own nausea, along with teaching them breathing exercises and imagery, can certainly cut down the cost. So this is also a process that can promote self-care for nurses and other healthcare providers in the hospital, because these practices can also be used to increase health and well-being. So in a perfect world, this is what we will be doing in healthcare, expanding the use of integrative therapies for not only the patients, but the staff and other clinicians. So that's my vision.
Thank you, Dr. Johanna Gaskins, a registered nurse, doctor of nursing practice, focusing on integrative health and healing. She is also a certified clinical aromatherapy practitioner. Thank you for joining me on Health Cetera today.
Thank you for having me, Barbara. It was my pleasure.